funniest player on the team for me is Belly, and it's the way he delivers them for real. It's like when he delivers his jokes, there's no laugh, and you really can't even tell if he's serious or not.
Okay, we deserve this win, man.
Fox Sports 5 flying high in Motown.
Oh my goodness.
I'm feeling great, man. I'm feeling the best I've ever felt.
I'm excited. I'm all about winning. I know that the fans here are extremely loyal and passionate. And just like them, I want to become not just a playoff team, but a sustained playoff team and eventually get back to some of that championship success and contention.
With the 12th pick in the 2020 NBA draft, the Sacramento Kings select Tyrese Haliburton.
Imagine being one of those players that's on a team that, you know, hasn't been in the playoffs in over a decade, almost two decades, about a decade and a half, and then being the first team to actually get to the playoffs. Just being able to be a part of that would definitely be something special. And if we can, you know, end up building a championship contending team, you're winning a championship in Sacramento. Like, that's looked at a lot differently. You probably feel better than you do with anything else.
Welcome back to another episode of the King's Pulse podcast presented by the King's Herald. My name is Brendan Nunez. No Rich Ivanowski on here today. Instead, we have one of the better basketball minds of the King's Herald. We have Omer Khan on here. How you doing, Omer? Appreciate you joining.
I'm doing well, but I don't know if I'm one of the greatest minds on
the website. We have some pretty smart guys on there, too.
Well, you're definitely up there, man, and I'm excited to get some of your thoughts on what we've seen in the preseason. And, you know, we're just recording right after this Warriors game, and it'd be hard to not talk about Kyle Guy. I feel like this is the way we got to kick it off. Just hit a game winner, 21 minutes, 20 points on 6 of 10 from 3, doing it off the dribble. He's playmaking a little bit for others, and yeah, tops it off with the game winner. Really impressive showing.
Really impressive. Really impressive. And you can tell that the year that he spent in the G League last year really paid off.
Yeah, definitely. Do you see and you know, there's a sadly somewhat a quote that comes out not long ago here from Luke Walton that I'm scrolling trying to find exactly, but paraphrasing, said that if everybody's healthy, there won't really be many minutes for Kyle Guy. Do you think that, obviously we haven't seen much, but would you feel comfortable with him getting spotty minutes as like a third string point guard? Like, I feel like he could fill this Yogi Ferrell role. I mean, it's not asking too much.
No, I don't think so. But you remember that last year Yogi barely got on the court either.
Right.
I could see Guy kind of getting onto the court the same way that Yogi did as the third point guard, filling in case of injuries or if anything else happens to the guys higher than him on the depth chart. But obviously what I hope from this season is that some of the veterans like Corey Joseph are moved so that he can actually get onto the court and a little more regularly as opposed to playing spot minutes.
Yeah, agreed. And I think that he also shouldn't be a primary playmaker out there. I don't even feel great about Haliburton being the primary playmaker, but it's definitely preferred over Guy. And if you have both of them out there, I guess you could get away with some minutes there, assuming that, you know, the goal is really development rather than winning games right now.
Right, right. Yeah, and I think that it's really important for him to get reps out there at point guard because of his size and athletic profile. He's, I think, like 6'1", 180 pounds. So he doesn't really have much hope of defending anything other than the one. And you kind of saw that in the game against the Blazers where he just got posted up and pushed around numerous times. But if he can be at least competent at defending one position at the point guard spot, and that would mean that on offense, he has to be the primary initiator. So I would be pretty happy with him getting point guard minutes this season, if this is going to be a developmental season, just to see what we have, just to see if he can, you know, develop into that Seth Curry type of player who is mostly a gunner, but can at least, you know, hold the fort at point guard.
Right. It's definitely the position for Guy. I'm with you there. And the versatility to his shooting has been impressive. I think a lot of it just coming off movement and not even quite having his feet lined up, but getting the shoulders there, has been impressive in these few games and obviously saw it a lot throughout the G League. He's shooting 40% plus on nearly 10 attempts, I believe something around that range. And someone that has a little bit more defensive versatility and has shown some impressive lateral quickness, I know you pointed out a little bit as well, is Justin James, who, you know, we've gotten a little bit of a peek at in this offseason. I don't know how many minutes are really going to be there for him in the regular season. But what have you seen from him specifically on the defensive end?
With Justin James, I've liked what I've seen from him on defense. He looks a lot more polished than he was last year. Last season, he was having trouble navigating screens and he was kind of getting lost in the shuffle. This year, it looks like he's put on a bit of muscle and he's able to stick with his man better, get through screens, read. And one thing I think that's been impressive with him is I like his ability to get into the passing lanes. He's gotten a good number of deflections the last few games in the preseason. There's one play that I had clipped as a part of that press that he got his hands right into the passing lane and he got Halliburton open for an open dunk right to end, I think it was the third quarter. So the thing with Justin James, though, is he needs to be able to shoot or he needs to be able to handle and make plays. And he hasn't been able to do that consistently. So if you are a wing type like Justin James and you can't shoot, you're a dime a dozen. There are dozens of guys just like you, and the odds are stacked against you in making the league. So he's got to be able to shoot that three consistently and space the floor. Otherwise, it's going to be an uphill climb for him to make an NBA roster.
Yeah, and when he does manage to get to the rim, he obviously likes to show off that athleticism. And one of these days, he's gonna throw down one of the posters, but I don't think it would hurt to maybe just go for a layup sometimes on a few of these. But, you know, the aggression's fun, and it's nice to see, but I think he could do with a little bit more control and may come with a little bit of time. You know, you mentioned the press. We can just touch on that a little bit here now. I had noticed it, and I'm sure listeners had as well in these first few games, and you really kind of broke it down a little bit and defined the layout of a little bit. Can you just explain what you noticed with this full court press?
Yeah, so basically I noticed that the Kings were dropping into a press. It's a 1-2-2 press, which means that there's one player advanced, two players zoning up on either side of the wing, and the last two players kind of hanging back. Those two players can either sag back and protect the rim, or they can add more pressure by coming up closer and adding even more. That's a more aggressive look. So the Kings would go into this look after they would shoot a free throw, and that was their trigger. And I thought it was pretty effective, and it helped speed up Portland's offense. They were kind of stuck into doing things that they didn't want to do. They didn't ever really look comfortable against it, and it's something you probably can't do on every possession just because of the energy that it takes, but it's something that you can just throw in there just to mix it up a bit. And it's really interesting considering that last year you saw zone defenses becoming more prevalent, where the conventional wisdom was that, oh, you know, the zone, it doesn't work in the NBA. So you kind of rarely saw it. But you look back and the zone was a prominent part of the Miami Heat's finals mm-hmm. run. I don't think they would make the finals without the zone defense. So it's this whole concept of reconsidering conventional wisdom. And you're looking back into, you're digging deep into the bag of tricks. You're trying to see what you can pull out and, you know, throw out there and see, hey, maybe it works. Maybe it gives you a competitive advantage. It's just thinking creatively and just rethinking how, what these norms are. And if you do that, you might strike gold. You never know. So who knows? Maybe the 1-2-2 press might become a prominent part of the Kings defense. Maybe they scrap it midseason. We'll have to see.
2020 has complicated most things in the world, including making hires. It's reshaped how we work, and it's almost over. Businesses across the globe are challenged to be their most efficient, which means every hire is crucial, and Indeed is here to help. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. It's the number one job site in the world with more total visits than any other job site. Helps you find quality candidates quickly so you can focus on hiring the person you need to keep your business going. And unlike these other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need, and you can pause your account at any time. No long-term contracts. Now, Indeed's new way of matching you with candidates instantly delivers a short list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job criteria that you can contact the moment you sponsor a job, making Indeed the only job site that can move as fast as you do. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Offer valid through December 31st. Terms and conditions apply.
You know, it's good to throw some different looks out there. We've seen a little bit of 2-3, and I think the Whiteside sitting down in the middle of that 2-3 is probably best for him. But this 1-2-2, I want to touch on a little more. I'm obviously, you know, with there supposedly being an increased emphasis on pace this year, I think that could be a big part of it. Obviously, the biggest thing that you're going to get from that is causing turnovers. And then the other end is, you know, if I think we saw Curry recognize it pretty quick tonight and just instantly throw over the second two guys. And there's just a lot of court for the guys down to work with. And, you know, the Kings don't have exactly a great defensive anchor sitting back there or anything. So it'll get you some steals and opportunities, but at the same time, going to concede some easy ones if not done properly. But I think that interestingly, Sacramento, mainly with the addition of Tyrese Haliburton, has some really interesting playmakers to throw in this 1-2-2 that can fill a lot of space with their length and properly trap and deny passing lanes. And I'm curious who you feel best fits this zone, specifically the guys causing chaos at the top aside from Haliburton.
I've seen Haliburton be pretty effective at the top of that 1-2-2 zone, the press. Justin James, like I mentioned earlier, he was able to get his hands in the passing lanes and cause all kinds of problems for the offense. But the archetype is really just quick, athletic guys with good instincts, good hands. Just projecting forward, you look at somebody like Robert Woodard. He might be somebody who you can use on the back end just because of his defensive versatility, his ability to cover multiple players, and his ability to protect the rim as a wing. So De'Aaron Fox at the top of that 1-2-2 is probably going to be pretty effective just because of his quicks and his instincts for getting into the passing lanes and his ability to attack the basket right after creating a live ball turnover. Who else? Yeah.
Corey Joseph?
Joseph, I think, would be tough. He's more of a kind of a set defensive guard. He's not really a guy that you see like shooting into the passing lanes. Ideally, you want somebody like, really light and explosive. Maybe Daquan Jeffries would be good at this, though we haven't really seen him too much in that.
Yeah, definitely interesting to watch for there. The after a free throw thing is interesting. I would guess there's probably not much to that, and it was just, you know, that's when they would decide to just implement it, just to kind of randomly space it out and everybody would be on the same page.
Well, with the free throws, because everybody's kind of in a set spot, it's easy to set up. So you have the guy, whoever is the guy who's shooting free throws, depending on who's shooting free throws, they can just easily drop back. And since everybody's kind of like in a set pattern, it's easy to organize it.
That makes sense. Yeah. This was also the first game that we got of Marvin Bagley this season. I was very glad to see him listed on this preseason roster as active and even ended up starting this game. It was productive when you look at the stat sheet, you know, 9 points, 4 rebounds in 16 minutes for Bagley. Walton said he was going to go out there for 3 different stints of about 5 minutes and kept true to his word there. Yeah, I mean, he was aggressive in chasing offensive boards, and I think it was just kind of standard Bagley minutes, but it was good to see him out there moving well.
Yeah, at this point, I think it's good just to get him onto the court, just to knock off that rust. Don't ask him to try to do too much. Just do what he's comfortable with, crashing the glass, posting up. Most of his baskets were within 5 to 10 feet of the rim. So we didn't really get to see his jumper at all. He went 1 for 2 from the free throw line. So I thought it was kind of like a callback to his rookie season, where he was just enormously productive, grabbing rebounds, scoring points, running the floor. But hopefully we'll get to see, as the season progresses, what elements Bagley's actually added to his game. See if he's added a 3-point shot. See what his defense looks like. So I'm excited. It's good to have him back.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. He definitely could benefit from that increased pace as well. And I feel like there's been a few moments, and maybe I'm overreacting to these 3 games, that offense has been, or the ball has been in the hands of a big man, the 5 at the elbow, and there's screens going off on both sides. And I kind of feel like this could be implemented just to have Bagley as kind of the primary guy in an offense where he's featured a little bit at times. And, you know, I don't know how I feel about him as a playmaker, but like, I don't mind if he is the focal point of an offense while he's out there. I mean, he is extremely talented there. And if he's going to be a productive player, I mean, that's your hope with him.
Yeah. Yeah. Regarding that, I'm not sure if I'd like to see him at the elbows, because you want to put him in scoring positions as much as possible. Just keep things simple for him. Get the ball, look for your shot. If you're doubled, swing it, pass the ball out, make plays for others. But when you have the ball at the top of the key, like the Kings do, you're trying to make like more complex reads. You're trying to watch like multiple cutters at the same time and guys coming off screens. I don't know if that's like the best usage of him.
Yeah.
Maybe it could be, but ideally you want him in positions where he's, let me walk that back a bit. Ideally you want him in scoring positions as much as possible, because that's what his best talent is it's scoring the ball.
Right. Yeah. And playmaking is probably not a strength at this point. And then we also saw the debut of Hassan Whiteside in a Kings jersey tonight. And I thought that, you know, there were some impressive moments. You can't deny 4 blocks, 11 points, 9 rebounds to go with that as well, and a steal. And I thought that specifically when he was sitting in the middle of that 2-3 zone, that and just kind of able to camp out in the paint. When guys get down there, he's a huge body with long arms and is strong and got decent timing there. So he was a decent rim protector. I worry definitely when he gets in space, but what were your impressions of the first look at Whiteside here?
It's pretty much the same Whiteside that I remember. You could see why he's so productive, why he puts up such huge numbers. He's got a huge frame and long arms, and he does have phenomenal shot blocking instincts, and that's something I remember from him back in when he was in college, and the Kings were scheduled to have a top 5 pick that year in 2010. Whiteside, if I'm not sure if you remember this, but Whiteside was slotted to be a first round pick. He was slotted to be in like the top 10 or 15 players. And the Kings legitimately considered him at 5 before they picked DeMarcus Cousins. And the reason was because he was such an amazing shot blocking prospect. And that's something that he's always had. He's just been, it's just something that comes naturally to him. He's got amazing timing, obviously he's huge. He's got the long arms. So that's what he brings to the team. The question is, can he just do enough of the rest of the things to make him viable on the court? When he gets the ball, can he make good decisions? You know, is he going to be a liability, like you said, trying to defend in space? And I think we saw all of that. Today, he was able to make plays with the ball, and that was pretty impressive. So I was actually really impressed with him. His reaction time is just, it's really slow. So sometimes when he gets the ball, it looks like he's just trying to figure out what to do with it for a second or two before moving. There's this one play where Halliburton fed him the ball in the paint. He kind of bobbled it, and then he decided to dunk it, so he did. So, I mean, that's the good and the bad with the Whiteside. That's why the Whiteside. That's the good and bad with Hassan Whiteside. Is that you'll get these monster rebounding and shot blocking numbers. You'll get excellent rim protection, but you'll get lost in complex against complex offensive schemes. When he has the ball, he's not always going to make the best decisions. And it just seems like he reacts a tick slowly to everything that happens on the court when you compare him to everybody else around him.
Yeah, now on a minimum deal, I like what he brings to the table. I think that he's definitely a fantasy sleeper for me with the numbers that he's going to put up. And you know, there's opportunity for some minutes at times on this Kings roster. I haven't really heard from you on what your hopes are for this season, maybe like some of the main things that you're really keeping an eye on or optimistic about heading into this year.
The main thing that I'm keeping an eye on are the development of Halliburton and Bagley, and to see which one, if any, of the Kings young guys, whether that's Kyle Guy or Justin James, Robert Woodard, Jamias Ramsey, who can become a contributor in the future. Because the Kings have De'Aaron Fox, who's 23 years old. He's inked to a 5-year extension. He's going to be the centerpiece. So you're trying to fit talent around his window. You're trying to find players who are around his age range who can become contributors. So those are the guys that I'm keeping an eye on. I'm also interested to see what happens with some of the deals that Vladdy handed out last year. Corey Joseph, Buddy Hield, Harrison Barnes. Those are big contracts that aren't exactly easy to move, but you can see that they can contribute to a team that's trying to compete for the playoffs. So how is the Kings front office going to take advantage of that? Are they going to be able to get anything for them?
Sports are coming back, and so are your chances to bet on your favorite teams and events. Major League Baseball and basketball is finally kicking off this week, and there's no better place to start wagering than our exclusive partners, BetOnline. Check out all the odds, futures, and props to bet on, all available 24/7. And with the return of sports, BetOnline sat down with former pro players Eddie George, Harold Reynolds, and 7-time NBA champion, we'll go with 6-time NBA champion, Robert Horry. See what they had to say and what it'll be like playing without fans in a series they're calling Fandemic. Visit betonline.ag for all your odds and up-to-date sports news. Remember to use promo code BLUEWIRE to receive your new welcome bonus. That's promo code BLUEWIRE. BetOnline, your online wagering experts.
You know, I feel like I've done a disservice here that we've gone so far having you on this episode and we haven't even talked about Jabari Parker. You're probably itching to get this out. I'm going to need you to sell me on Jabari Parker's role on this team.
I my favorite archetype in the NBA is that 3-4. They used to call them tweeners. I'm not sure if that's the right word to use anymore because positionless basketball and all of that. But back in the day when you had somebody coming out into the draft who was not quite a small forward, but not quite a power forward either, you would call him a tweener. So I love these kinds of players because I think that the NBA is littered with them. I mean, the best teams in the NBA have really good tweeners. So you look at somebody like Andre Iguodala, who is a small forward, but you can bump him down to the four. You look at somebody like PJ Tucker, you know, again, he has the size of a small forward, but he plays the four. And he even bumps down to the five at times. So, I mean, you can kind of go across the league and you'll find pretty much every team, every good to great team has one of these guys. And I think Jabari Parker fits that physical archetype. Obviously, he hasn't showed the ability to play defense yet.
Yeah, but, at all.
At all. At all. That, okay, fine. At all. Stab me with the knife, why don't you?
But no, you're fine.
I think so. I feel like the tweener has almost evolved to being in between the four and the five. And typically, like, when I think of tweener, when it's, like, as a issue, it's that they're not able to guard either position. And, like, this is, like, the worry with Bagley, right? That he isn't big enough for fives but not quick enough for fours defensively.
I don't know. Jabari Parker, I don't know who he's guarding. He can put up some numbers though. If he can fit into the flow of an offense and not disrupt it and kind of have to take things into his own hands, he is a talented offensive player.
Oh, for sure. He can score. And I'm telling you, he can pass too. I saw some pretty impressive passing instincts from him where in short and small samples, albeit, but at the same time, I think that you can operate with him, you can get the ball in the high post, and I feel like he can make good decisions there. I think the first preseason game he was playing as the backup center. So
yeah.
And that's what he also played in the bubble. That's not the best spot for him. I think he's better off playing the four next to somebody like Richaun Holmes. I want to see how he can defend the perimeter. He's got good size, good length. His lateral quickness remains to be seen after all the injuries. He's a talented scorer. He can pass. He can rebound. He can handle a bit. He could be a diamond in the rough. He might have some trade value at the deadline. Who knows? If all this preseason training camp hype is real, I don't know. I'm just saying it's possible.
Man. But... yeah, you're lucky Rich isn't here.
Oh, man. I mean, I'm going to get it from him.
No, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know how much I'm on board with you on this one either. I hope, man. I hope.
Who knows?
Yeah. I don't know what else I have here, man. We can touch on Halliburton a little bit. I mean, it's obviously these defensive instincts, man. The way that he's able to stop opposing transition breaks and getting in these passing lanes and the anticipation from him and having quick reaction speed to go with it. He's been phenomenal.
Yeah. I think that was one of the big notable things about him coming out of the draft was that his ability to get steals and create turnovers and play in transition. That was a big part of his appeal. And we've kind of seen that already. We've seen him, you know, grab a steal and throw an instant pass up ahead, igniting a fast break. And it's a lot of fun to watch because, you know, he's a rookie with no summer league experience. This is all just basically natural instinct for him. And I can't wait to see what'll happen once he gets, like, you know, 2-3 seasons under his belt.
Me how either.
Good he'll be.
And alongside Fox too, when he's giving these outlet passes to Fox and Bagley up there, it's going to be that's going to be a blast. You know, I'll throw you one other thing here, and I don't want to blindside you too much. The last thing here, what is one lineup
that would excite you this season?
One lineup that would excite me. So we're three preseason games into this season so far. I want to see Kyle Guy, Tyrese Halliburton, Daquan Jeffries, Glenn Robinson III, and Marvin Bagley at center. I want to see what they can do. I know Fox is good. I know he's going to be a really good player. Those five guys, I think that two or three of them could be contributors in the future. Bagley obviously has the highest ceiling, but I want to see what Daquan Jeffries and Kyle Guy and Glenn Robinson can do as well.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think Glenn Robinson, I've been surprised at his aggressiveness on the offensive end. I know some people were a little concerned that he was kind of taking too many of his own shots. I didn't think that was all too much of a problem. And defensively, he has some great rotations to him. They definitely added some smart defenders on this team when you look at Tyrese and Glenn Robinson, and then obviously having Daquan Jeffries and Corey Joseph. Like, there's some defenders on this team, Harrison Barnes as well, that there's moments of really impressive rotations that are pulled off effectively. I'm shocked that Jabari Parker isn't in the lineup. It's just the same as Fox, right? We know he's good. We know what we're getting.
Well, I'm assuming Jabari Parker is traded for a top five
pick. For Trevor Ariza. Oh, okay.
Even better.
Right. All right. Well, I think that's all I have for you here, Omer. Is there anything else that that I'm missing that you want to get out here?
Shout out to Richard. He called Kyle Guy and Justin James being good players. Kyle Guy is coming online. Justin James, not quite there yet, but we'll see. Otherwise, I hope Rich is collecting the Euros to buy stock, because that's where Justin James is headed next.
There we go. Yeah, this is the Kyle Guy podcast for sure. it was the night of Guy. Game winner, the bogey replacement right out the gate. But yeah,
it was fun.
It definitely was.
And it was great to see the whole bench really excited for him.
Yeah, he faked out the guy. He had to, he went flying by. It was actually an impressive one. It wasn't some spot up or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he created that all by himself.
Yeah, yeah. Well, thank you for joining, Omar. The Twitter handle for yourself is @O_A_Khan, KHAN. Definitely everybody listening, go follow him there. Great analysis coming from you, like you were touching on the full court press. But thank you for coming on the show. Really appreciate it. And thank you to everybody for listening to this episode of the King's Pulse podcast. Go check out the work being done at the King's Herald and support the Patreon there. And if you enjoyed this episode of the King's Pulse podcast, please subscribe, rate, and review. And you'll hear from us again in the next couple of days.